Welcome to the Narrators Podcast. I'm Robert Rutherford.
And I'm Andrew Orvidal. This podcast collects stories that were told at the Narrators, a monthly storytelling event that features people telling true stories based on a theme.
The show takes place on the third Wednesday of every month at the Buntport Theater in Denver, Colorado.
These stories were recorded live on August 20th, 2014. The theme of the evening was Lost. We'd like to give a special shout out to our newest sponsor, Breckenridge Brewery, who is now providing beer at our live show. Thanks, Breck. If you'd like to know more about Breckenridge Brewery, visit breckbrew.com. Enjoy these stories.
Your next storyteller is another comedian. He has recently moved from Omaha, Nebraska, but he is a Denver favorite. He is beloved in this town. So please give a warm welcome to Ian Douglas Terry.
How's it going, guys? This is fun. I feel like you guys are like a studio audience right now for like Hot Topic Presents. You can't dress like that anymore, dude. It's true. I want to tell you a story about growing up. I know, yeah, the Big Bang Theory's drug dealer is going to tell you a story about growing up. But fortunately, I think I have. I don't know if anyone else has, but yeah, I grew up. At one point, I was in my mid-20s. Anyone here currently in their mid-20s? All right, you're all monsters. You're terrible monsters. When I was in my mid-20s, I was the worst person ever. Like, it was worse than I was when I was a sexy teen. Like, it was like that times more because I could legally drink and didn't live with my parents. So it was nuts. And I was a dude that's in a band at that time, which those are the worst dudes ever. Is anyone here in a band? Quit. Get out of it. It's not cool, man. Unless it's like a sweet band. Like if it's like, you know, like one of those dubstep reggae bands. I'm into that. But now I was in a band. Didn't really do much besides drink and like act like a jerk to people, which I guess that's like most of the band thing anyways. But my drinking had gotten to a point where people told me they could no longer drink with me. They're like, hey, we can't drink with you. It's too scary. And I was like, I wasn't doing anything crazy. Like, it wasn't like, you know, like a Buck Cherry video. It was just normal. But, like, what they were talking about is, and I don't know if they ever had this here. I feel like Lincoln, Nebraska was probably the test market for this war atrocity. But it was an energy drink called Wild Buzz. And it came in liter bottles. Yeah, because they're like, no, this makes sense. They need more of this. So I'd get three of those every single weekend and like a handle of vodka, and that's what I would drink the entire weekend. And people would be like, I can't drink you with you anymore because I wake up every hour because my heart is pounding. And I was like, oh yeah, no, that just happens. That's normal, right? I thought that was just having fun. So like I started making all these like life decisions. Like I was like, I should probably fix this. It's kind of scary. I could probably, you know, like something bad could eventually happen. So I quit drinking, moved to a different city, Omaha, which it's a Counting Crows song. And then I decided, you know what? I need to do something else. I need to like expand my horizons. I need to move to an entirely different place, a place I've never been. And there's a lot of reasons people move places. Like you get like a cool job, you know, that pays you a bunch of money. Maybe you have like an existential crisis. Mine, it was because I met a girl on the internet. Never move for that reason. That's a dumb reason. At the time, it's like, no, this makes total sense. Everything adds up. We both like music. We both like movies. Who else likes those things? This person and me, we know everything about each other. It's done. It's ready. And so I was like, I'm going to move to Atlanta, Georgia. This makes total sense. So I moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and start dating this very nice girl. She was the nicest person ever. She told me she'd never hated anyone in her life, and I was like, how? Like, how can you exist and not hate at least one person? At least once just be like, man, like, fuck you, Belushi, get out of here. That was a weird person to get mad at. I'm sorry. His restaurant pisses me off. So I moved to Atlanta, and there was all kinds of stuff that we didn't tell each other about each other because we were just doing the, like, what's all the best stuff? Let's just talk about that. I didn't tell her that I hadn't had a job ever and had just gone through, like, the worst drinking and being a terrible person. She thought I was just this cool, like, rock and roll dude. And then she didn't tell me that both of her parents were separately millionaires and that she made more money than my parents combined. My parents are public school teachers, or were until they retired. So, you know, it's not a ton of money. We know how terrible the public education system is. But still, so it's like, oh, hey, by the way, I bought us a house. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do. Like, what do you do? Like, that, I wasn't prepared for any of that. I was like, hey, maybe we'll just hang out and talk about, like, what Saves the Day albums are favorite. I don't know. She's like, I got us a house. And it was a super nice house, like, crazy, in the Atlanta suburbs in Kennesaw, like hundreds of thousands of dollars. And her mother was like a real estate person, so it was kind of like that. Which, oh, hey, she bought us a house four doors down from her mom's house. That's kind of fun. And then her dad was the executive for, I think it was an energy company called Tyco. I kept thinking it was like the toy company. I'm like, whoa, sweet. But it was like, no, more oppressive. And so I'm just like, just completely out of place, because I don't understand any of that, because like, I never had more than like a couple hundred dollars. So it's like, this person just kept buying things, and I'm like, what am I supposed to do? And she's like, oh yeah, you have to like grow up. And I was like, oh, all right. And she's like, what are your goals? And I was like, what now? I had nothing. I could not come up with a single goal. My goal up to that point had just been like, have fun, dude. And you can't say that to someone and expect them to ever want to sleep with you again. So I just started, I was like, I don't know, like maybe like open a record store or something cool. And I was like, where the fuck would I ever own a record store? That's the dumbest thing. And so we started drifting apart a little bit. But then I stumbled, like I had like just a car wash job where when you pull up to the car wash, this guy is like, hey, do you want this thing or that thing? Okay, great. That was my job. And it was, yeah, I could handle that. I went to a 2-year college. I could nail this. And then one day, a dude with like the sweetest mullet I've ever seen in my life pulls up in this awesome sports car. And this is one of those things that like yeah, they're right. That happens in movies. But this guy was just like, hey, you're a great guy. Do you want to work for me? And I was like, yes. I don't know. But he didn't tell me what he did. But I was like, yes, absolutely. You're a Jewish guy with a mullet. I'm 100% on board with whatever you're into. And it was working for a Singular, remember them? Only 90s kids will get that. But for a Singular agent in the greater Atlanta area. So I became a telephone, cell phone salesman. And I was like making crazy money, which was like, you know, more than a couple hundred dollars. So it was great. And I had this job. And I wasn't the person I was when I left, which is good, but I wasn't me at all. I was just this person, had this job, and then there was a person I was dating, had all these expectations. Her mother, super Catholic, made me pray, bought me shirts. Like, yeah, I know. People had to buy me shirts, obviously. Like, look at this. And like, I didn't have any friends really, except for the guys I worked with, and they were all not from Atlanta, all from different places. And we got a roommate that was her best friend in college, who she referred to as the Night Terror, where it's like, yeah, the Night Terror's moving. This will be great. Had to kick her out eventually because it was a Night Terror, not like the kind of just a drunken, weird, real world type stuff with people yelling and big muscular dudes threatening to knock me out. But so it was just bad. It was bad. And my parents came and visited. So it was just this weird, surreal thing, because they were just real weird the whole time. They're like, oh, yeah, this is great. Yeah. All right. Okay. They're like looking at the house, the yard, the dog. And it was just like, oh, okay. Yeah, great. And like in my mind, I was like, I'm finally doing everything that they'd ever want me to. I have an older sister. She was the good one that did all the right stuff. Tennis scholarship. Hell yeah. you know, she has kids, husband, the whole deal. And then there's me, who was like the idiot that everyone was just super impressed I didn't have a DUI yet. And so this whole time I'm like, I'm finally an adult. I'm doing all these adult things. This is me now. And before they left, my mom just goes, I hope you're okay. And it was like the weirdest, where I was like, am I okay? So to wrap this up a little bit, how it all ended, because, you know, relationships like that always end real great. Nice handshake, a good how do you do. I got a book thrown at me while I was taking a bath. One laugh. Yeah, everyone else is like, why would you throw a book into a bathtub? That's insane. And it was a night. It was like one of those whirlpool baths, like a hot tub. Yeah, but a book thrown at me because, you know, she'd had enough of me being me, but not me. So I was like, her me, but not me, if that makes any sense. And she goes, I have a new boyfriend now. He's going to be over here all the time. And I'm like, oh, what do I do? And she's like, whatever you want to do. So I got in my car and drove all the way back to Nebraska. And so, yeah, it was a real weird car ride. Like, going through, like, okay, did I fail? Did I, like, ruin? Was I, like, you know, was that the best I could do? And I failed at the best I could do? Maybe there's something wrong with her. She seemed to have her shit together, so I'm probably the one to blame. And I get back, and I talk to my mom, and she was just like, I'm so happy you're back. That wasn't you at all. That wasn't you. I'm so happy, and, like, hugged me, and I was like, well, all right. And so now I'm here doing this. I don't know what I would be doing if I was still there. Probably have a lot of nice shirts. Thank you guys so much. You're great.
So we have another new storyteller coming to the stage. She is a friend of a friend of the show. So please give a warm welcome to Shelley Cox.
Thanks. Please be patient with me. This is my first time. I'm in the process of applying for an internship, so I'm changing my career at the age of 29, almost 30, which is really difficult with a full-time job. I have to get all my official transcripts for this internship that I'm applying for, and I wasn't a traditional student, so I went to many schools, and most of them mailed them to me, which was awesome, but this one I had to go and pick up. Colorado Christian University was the first school I went to. If you don't know it, it's a small Christian school in Lakewood. If you hear me refer to it as the crazy Christian school, it's what it'll be from the rest of the story. So I went there last Friday to pick up my transcripts, and the campus was kind of empty. The students normally don't have classes on Friday. And they had built a bunch of buildings, and it looked completely different from when I had been there when I was 18. And so I was kind of lost. I didn't really know where I was going. And I finally found someone on campus and asked them where the registrar's office was, and they pointed me in the general direction. And I found this new building and got into it, and it was completely empty. Like, I said, hello, like, is anyone there? And there was no one there, and I noticed, like, a secretary's desk that had, it looked like a secretary's desk, and I was like, well, they should be here to pick up. And so in my head, I'm like, well, I could just look for them. Like, she's not here. Like, they have to be, like, right there, you know? And if you've ever been on, like, a Christian campus or a church at all, you kind of feel like God's watching you. Like, that's how I felt, you know, but I kind of like went over there anyway, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to do it. Like, I'm going to go through her desk and look for my transcripts. So I did, and I didn't find them. A lot of boring stuff, but I didn't find them. So I finally went around to the other side of the building where people were working, I guess. I don't know. And anyway, I got my transcripts, but all of this really reminded me, brought back to me how I was lost when I was 18 and I showed up there for the first time, fresh out of high school, a little youngin. A little background, I'm from Wisconsin, typical Midwest family, nothing out of the ordinary. I was a pretty good kid. I mean, I was going to a Christian school, for God's sake, so I followed the rules, you know, I was a good kid. Another important part of the story and also hilarious part of it is I'm gay. I've known this pretty much my whole life. It wasn't something I really ever questioned. I've just had crushes on girls when I was little instead of guys, and it wasn't something I questioned or asked, or it was just something I've always, like, known, I feel like. Looking back, when I was 18, I was going to go to the school, and I was so full of, everyone wants to go to college, and I wanted to ask the big questions, struggle with life, and do the college thing that everybody wants. And so I think looking back now, it's kind of adorable, like, that I was so, like, naive. Like, I thought, oh, I can be gay and I can go to this Christian school, which I'm sure I'm not, you know, I'm sure you can be a gay. You can be gay. Sorry. You can be gay and a Christian, but in, you know, it was cute that I thought that was possible, because when I finally showed up at this Christian university, it was not that way. And, you know, so I finally get to the crazy school in Colorado, and all the way from Wisconsin, and I'm, you know, you're excited, you're meeting people, you're signing up for your classes, you're signing all these health forms, and, you know, you're meeting your roommates, moving in, and, yeah, so I kind of, like, tried out this coming out thing, which, you know, they would be like, oh, do you have a boyfriend back home? And I was like, no, I think I like girls. Like, you never really know, like, how to do that. So I kind of was like trying it out, and it wasn't like well accepted the way my cute little 18-year-old mind thought it would be. And so in my head I was like, why are they so judgmental, those assholes? Like, God, like, God loves me too, you know? Like, I don't know, I was so cute, you know? And then it just got really real fast. So then a few days later I was asked to meet with a student chaplain, and if you're not familiar with the Christian lingo or that sector, it's kind of like I think of it as like the Denver parking police. Like, they have too much power and they're everywhere and they're giving you tickets. Like, you know, you've been sitting there 1 minute, you get a ticket, like, street sweeping, done. Like, so they're kind of like that. They just hand out tickets and they're full of themselves. So anyway, I get asked to meet with this student chaplain, and, you know, I'm just like, what's up? Like, cool. And, turns out one of the papers that I signed on my first day was something called a lifestyle covenant, which is kind of like the private sector's way of having them follow your rules, or you follow their rules. So I learned that I had apparently signed a lifestyle covenant, which, among many other things, it was, you know, no sex, no drugs, no smoking, and you can't be gay or be accepting of the lifestyle. So my heart just, like, dropped. I was like, oh, shit. Like, I did not know this. Like, I don't know. I did not know that. And if you know me at all, like, I'm a rule follower. Like, I was a little kid who told on myself. Like, you know, so when someone tells me, like, before school even started that I was breaking a rule, like, I was not... You know, I was just, like, really anxious. And so I was kind of put into this, what I guess now would be called ex-gay therapy. But at first, it was just weekly meetings with the therapist. And they, you know, made me sit down with a psychiatrist. And they tried to get me on, like, a bunch of meds. And they're like, you're depressed. And I was like, am I? I wasn't before I came here. Like, I don't think, like, you know. So it was just... a spiral of doing everything they told me to do to change who I was. And I, you know, gave it the good college try to date guys, or I don't know, it, whatever they wanted me to do. And, so I tried it, but, you can't really change that. And, after about a year, of this, you know, just, I feel like I had memorized the Bible, or I had done everything they had asked me to do, go to worship, all those meetings and therapy, and I had been on various antidepressants, which probably made me depressed, even though I wasn't. So after about a year, I was really lost on a campus that I thought was going to be this freeing place, and it was really lonely. I think you can only go so long after someone tells you this isn't the way God made you. Like, you start to believe it and you start to internalize that. You don't think you're good enough. And I was filled with a lot of shame about who I was. And it just kind of took over my life. I, at this point, I just started to self-destruct. I think anyone... in that position would. when you're told that you aren't good enough. And I started to take it out on my body because I couldn't change what was inside of me. So I stopped eating. I stopped taking care of myself. I started to change my body because I couldn't change what was inside of me. And it was a really painful time. And I think at the start of my sophomore year, I kind of accepted that this wasn't changing. Like, if it was going to change and if this was a choice, I would have changed. But I didn't. And so I was, you know, harming myself and really depressed and stopped trying to change. And I was, I sneaked off to Boulder to visit my girlfriend because we're all the other lesbians, you know? So I don't know. I probably like Googled it or something secretly. I don't know what I did. But, so, you know, I would like go off to do that. And I told my RA about it. And she, you know, we would have these prayer, whatever. And I didn't even care at that point. And my RA would kind of like scold me or like, oh, you shouldn't do that. Mind you, she's the one who I just saw on Facebook who's been in a relationship for like 5 years with a woman. So I don't know what to say about that. But, it was a little upsetting. Anyway, so I was doing that my sophomore year and basically could have gotten kicked out for my behavior. And I remember at one point, one of my good friends, Barb, we had a conversation near the end of my sophomore year where she, you know, she had her boyfriend on campus and they were having sex. And so we were both kind of like sinners. Like, we bonded over this, like, we're both bad, so we might as well be, like, friends. You know, I was like, I won't tell on you because you're having sex, and you won't tell on me because I'm going to Boulder. So we had kind of, like, a mutual friendship going on that benefited us. And we just had a really good conversation where she sat me down, and she was like, you're not a bad person. You're, like, there's nothing wrong with you. Like, you need to stop trying to change. And you know, I told her the same person. I was like, you're not a bad person for having sex, you know, like simple, but I hadn't heard that in a really long time. And the me that was so confident and adorable at like 18, like that was crushed. And it was so good to hear that from, my friend. And so thankfully I transferred at the end of my sophomore year before I got kicked out. But I mean, there's been a lot of healing since then. A lot of therapy to redo the ex-gay therapy, you know, but I feel like anyone would have to do that. But it was, I feel like the more that positive experiences that I've had with coming out, they replace the negative, and those people's, you know, opinions don't matter as much. And I think we're all a little bit lost, but I'm not, I don't know, that far gone anymore. And I'm confident in who I am and thankful to share my story. So thank you.
That was Shelley Cox.
The Narrators Podcast is recorded and produced by Ron Doyle.
The Narrators Podcast is brought to you by these amazing sponsors.
The great guys at Illegal Pete's and Greater Than Records, who in addition to providing rad burritos all over town, provide great local music and comedy.
Check out the appropriately named Sexy Pizza at either of their locations in Capitol Hill or Old South Pearl, or on their website, sexypizzaonline.com.
And finally, by the internet superheroes at Commerce Kitchen, who provide internet marketing solutions and search engine optimization for all your e-commerce needs. Check them out at commercekitchen.com.
For more information about the Narrators and to listen to past episodes, go to thenarratorspodcast.com. Thanks for listening.